Welcome to the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church. We hope our broadcast will bless you.
I want to take you back a little ways. I want to take you back to a valley known as the Valley of Elah. In the Valley of Elah, the sun is just coming up this morning. And as the sun is coming up and begins to rise in the eastern sky, the dew begins to evaporate. It's a rather quiet morning as the men from the army of Israel are camped along the valley wall. And you can hear a few soldiers stirring around. Some are preparing their morning meal. Others are ready in their armor. But there's an eerie silence that just seems to loom over the valley. For some 40 days now, the men had camped along this valley wall, waiting, watching, with the anticipation of a mighty clash between them and the Philistine army. As many days prior, suddenly that eerie silence was shattered. As the giant from Gath, bearing the name of Goliath, steps to the opposite side of that valley. And just like many mornings before, Goliath begins to howl with laughter. He begins to rant. He begins to rave. He begins to taunt not only the armies of God, but God Himself. His words were very menacing. And his appearance was staggering. You see, Goliath was no ordinary man. He was indeed a giant of a man. The Bible tells us that he stood 6 cubits and a span tall. To our eyes, Goliath would have stood 9 feet, 9 inches tall. A tower of a man. And to the eyes of the men of Israel, he was as broad as he was tall. And as they looked at Goliath yet again this morning, they saw him clothed with his armor. He had a highly polished helmet of bronze that glistened in the sunlight. Word through the camp was that his armor weighed 126 pounds. It was enough armor, friends, to cover 3 average-sized men. And your average soldier could not maneuver in battle with that type of weight upon them. His spear. That weight did not include his spear. It did not include the javelin that he carried. And if you weren't able to see the enormous spearhead atop his spear, you could have easily mistaken his spear for a weaver's beam. It was enormous. The head of that spear was said to have weighed just over 15 pounds. And just the very sight of that man, the very sight of that spear, the very thought of that spear striking you in the chest set fear through the heart of every man in the camp of Israel. As Goliath ranted, as Goliath howled from the other side of the valley wall, Saul sat in his tent. When he would tire of sitting, he would get up and he would walk in his tent. Back and forth, and for nearly 40 days, Saul had pondered the question in his mind, how will I resolve this conflict? The answer had escaped him in all days prior. And as this new day dawned, Saul saw no hope of finding an answer to his desperate problem. But not everyone was aware of the things that were taking place at Elah. In fact, most of Israel had no idea that the mighty armies of God, the mighty armies of Saul, were camped out, trembling in fear at the very sound of Goliath's voice. David was among those who had no idea what was happening. You see, David, being a master harpist, he would play for Saul during his times of anguish. We're told in the Bible that God's spirit departed from Saul and a troubling spirit came. And David would come and play his harp to alleviate Saul's suffering. But David had been called home just prior to the march. David was back with his elderly father, Jesse, because David would go back and he would help tend to the sheep. But not all of Jesse's sons were at home. Three had left with Saul to march to Elah. And you know, the older Jesse got, the more he worried about his sons when they would go off to battle. Jesse called David and he said, "My son, I want you to take this food, this cheese. I want you to take it to your brothers at the front lines. Go and take some to the master of the army there as well. Please bring me back word of your brothers." Jesse's three eldest sons were among those camped along the valley wall. David was a very courageous boy. He didn't hesitate. When his father asked him to go on this errand, David's heart pounded with anticipation. He gathered the supplies that his father wanted him to take, and he rushes off to the Valley of Elah. And as David arrives, the men of Israel are mounting their formation along the valley wall. David thought, "Man, I got here just in time to see them readying for the fight." So with great anticipation, he checks his things with the one in charge of keeping the baggage. And David rushes up to the battle line. And as he draws nearer, he can see the Philistines also readying for battle. The next thing that David saw was not what he expected. As the two armies drew near one to another, David saw from in the midst of the Philistine ranks, he saw one emerge that he had never seen such the likes of before. Goliath pushes his way through the ranks of the Philistines. And he comes out and he begins his usual tirade. He begins to curse at the armies of Israel. He begins to curse the God of Israel. And the scripture tells us, at the very sight of Goliath, the men of Israel turned and fled. David was astounded. As he's standing there, as he's being bumped by the soldiers that rush past him to retreat to the safety of their camp, David's mind wanders back and remembers the stories. He remembers all of the battles where God had called his men to rally against the craziest of odds. And David remembered how in each of those stories, that those who stood with God always stood with the majority. So he began to question. He asked the men of Israel, he said, "What is the king offering for the one who will stand up and put an end to the taunting of this uncircumcised Philistine?" Well, they told him, "Well, the king has promised great riches. The king will not only make you wealthy, but he's even willing to throw in his daughter as an added bonus." And David said, "Why? Why has not anyone stood up to squelch this one who taunts the living God?" As David asked his questions, not everyone was happy with the things that he raised. In fact, his eldest brother, Eliab, spoke up to David. And he was beyond irritated at this point. And he said to David, he said, David, why are you here? Why are you not back tending the sheep where you belong? The Bible tells us that anger burned in his heart. He said, I know why you're here, David. You just want to find out what's going on. I've got sisters and brothers. I can kind of picture the dialogue. Use a little sanctified imagination. You can see it, can't you? David, why don't you just go back home? I'm sick of you. Always, your little self, you're always here, you're doing this. Why don't you just go back and help Pop? We've got this covered. But you could tell, David was used to holding his own. David was not one to cower under the pressure. In fact, he popped right back at his brother. And he said to his brother, he said, I just asked a question. What harm is there in asking a question? You can almost picture just a little smile on David's face, can't you? As he saw all of the army retreat past him back to the camp, and David says, why are you guys running away? Well, that was a little bit of a slap to Eliab, was it not? Because he certainly didn't stand out and face the Philistine giant on his own. And what had happened just prior to this part of the story in the Bible? Had not David been chosen by Samuel at the request of God and anointed as the future king of Israel? So not only was my little brat of a brother now here trying to find out everything's going on, not only has he been anointed the king, but now he's throwing it in our faces asking why we have run from God. This dialogue, this exchange, did not stay within the circle. In fact, word quickly reached the tent of Saul. And Saul sent for David. When David steps into the tent, the air is just thick with doubt and fear. You've heard the old saying, you could feel the tension in the air. But David, trying to rise to the occasion, he quickly spoke to King Saul. And he said, O king, don't let the heart of anyone in Israel be troubled because of this uncircumcised Philistine. King, I'll go out. Let me be the one. I will go out and I will face the giant. Well, at this time, Saul still loved David. And he says to him, he says, David, you are but a youth. And Goliath, well, he has been a warrior since his youth. So David, thank you for the offer. Really, really, it's very kind of you. But we've got this covered. David pops back in his defense. He says, O king, you must realize, yes, I am a youth, but I have fought before. As I've tended my father's sheep, one time a lion came. And the Lord gave me victory over that lion. On another occasion, king, a bear came. And the Lord also gave me victory over that bear. And king, as you live today, the Lord will give me victory over this uncircumcised Philistine giant. Saul can see that David is going to have no part of his pleading. And since Saul's armor wasn't being used, he had it tucked away in his tent where it'd be nice and safe. He goes over and shakes the dust off of his armor and brings it to place upon David. Well, the Bible tells us Saul was no ordinary man as well. We're told in the scriptures that Saul's shoulders began where the tops of most people's heads ended. So Saul was a giant in his own right when it came to physical stature. So when Saul draped his armor upon David, the young shepherd boy from Bethlehem has swallowed him whole. David quickly realized, he said, I cannot fight in this armor. I've not tested it. This is not my armor. So friends, instead of choosing the armor of Saul, David chose the armor of the King of Kings. He stepped out of the tent. He makes his way down the valley to the brook that ran through the valley floor. David kneels down. And Brad, thank you for my stone. David knelt down and he chose for himself from the brook 5 smooth stones. He inspected them. He placed them within his shepherd's pouch. And with great haste and with great zeal, David takes off on across the valley. Goliath, well, he was as arrogant as he was loud and large. He looks out across the valley and he sees little David making his way across the stones and across the trail. And he calls out to him. He says, "Am I a dog that you would come at me with sticks?" As he sees this little twerp of a shepherd boy coming to face the mightiest of warriors from among the Philistines. David was undaunted. He cries back to Goliath. He says, "You come at me with the weapons of war, but I come at you in the name of the living God whom you have taunted." And as he goes closer and closer to Goliath, he reaches within that shepherd's pouch and he chooses one of those stones. Goliath is just continually bewildered. So much so that he tilts that bronze helmet back just a little bit. And I can just see him standing there in all of his cocky arrogance, thinking to my, who is this? What is this? What kind of ruse? What kind of joke is this? Am I a dog? So as he stands there in his glaring arrogance, David readies his sling. He places that smooth stone within that sling. And just as the story tells us from our childhood, the sling went how, friends? Round and round. And I have this mental image of a shepherd boy who the Bible tells us is ruddy in appearance, which means red. In other words, he had a good tan. He was good looking. This good looking little shepherd boy, faithful to serving his father and faithful to serving his king, runs across the valley of Elah, readying his sling, and at the right moment, releases one end of that sling to send that smooth stone whistling through the air. Friends, when that stone struck the forehead of Goliath, it struck with a cracking thud. It happened so fast, Goliath barely knew what hit him. In almost an instant, he became unconscious. And that towering warrior of a man became a crumpled heap upon the ground. David never missed a beat. He continued his charge. He rushes up to Goliath. Not having a sword of his own, he reaches down to the warrior from Gath, draws out his own sword, and with all of his young might, he hoists that sword above his head, intent on bringing it down upon the neck of Goliath. Friends, in one pass, Goliath's head fell from his body. At that moment, the eerie silence that had been there earlier that day was suddenly broken once again as the cries of war from the men of Israel roared from the valley wall. The Philistines saw their champion fall. And the men of God, with newfound courage, with newfound faith, they rushed down the valley wall and they pursued the Philistines. In fact, the Bible tells us that the bodies of the Philistines were strewn all the way back to Gath. That day saw the fall of many Philistines, and it saw the restoration of glory to the God of Israel. I know that none of us have ever faced a Philistine giant. I dare say that very few of us in this room have faced combat. But I know that there are those among us today who have served this country in times of war and times of peace. This coming Tuesday, our country will pause as we celebrate Veterans Day. Banks will close. Government centers will close. Car lots will have Veterans Day sales. Come get your bargain. All of the stores will have their particular sale. And friends, I have tried for years, even before I became a veteran myself, I always asked myself the question, how does closing a bank, how does stopping the progress serve to honor those who have stood up in the face of the giants of war in our times? Why not celebrate freedom? Why not honor those men and women who have served by having events that further the cause of freedom around the world? Friends, I recognize that even if I had a litany of wonderful ideas that would allow us to better celebrate Veterans Day, those suggestions are not likely to reach much farther than the CDs of this service will go. So that's why I want to focus somewhere else. I'll tell you what bothers me more than banks closing for Veterans Day. What bothers me more than banks closing for Veterans Day is seeing the men and women of God cower before the giants in their life. You see, friends, David was not the only one on that field of battle that day that knew how the God of Israel had led in the past. Amen? But David was the only one willing to stand up that day and say to his men, say to his friends, to his brothers, to his king, why are you turning from this uncircumcised Philistine? Who is he against the living God? And so a shepherd boy ran the charge. Friends, that same God that directed David's stone that day is the same God who wants to help you face your giants. I think back to some times in my life when I have faced some very difficult giants myself. And I want to share a story with you today. A story that's very difficult for me to share, because it exposed a weakness in my own spirituality. As many of you know, I had the opportunity to serve our great nation as a chaplain assistant for the United States Army. You say, okay, Pastor, that's not news. What some of you may not realize is that to be a chaplain assistant in the United States Army is to carry a weapon. In fact, there is only one position within the U.S. Army that you do not have to carry a weapon. Some people would say, well, Pastor, what about medics? What about physicians? Friends, every medic that I saw, every physician that I met, had either an M9 Beretta on their side, or an M16, or an M4, or some other firearm strapped to their bodies. There is only one position in the Army where you don't have to worry about carrying a weapon, and that's the actual chaplain. The chief of chaplains has said that no chaplain will bear arms. And there are some chaplains who would like to. I've met them. And there's a huge push within the army to make it optional for chaplains to carry a weapon. But when it came time for me to enlist in the army, I had no qualms with bearing arms. I had always said to myself, I do not want to hide behind the freedoms that others have died to give me. So I had no problem with bearing arms in defense of my nation and in defense of my family. When I entered my training, the Lord blessed me. I excelled quickly. The concepts that they taught us came to me very naturally. I loved being a soldier. My leadership recognized this. And even as an E3, as an E4, I was given positions of responsibility within our battalion headquarters detachment. And I was very good with a weapon. I was actually the top marksman on the M16 and the M249 squad automatic weapon, which is a fully automatic machine gun. So I had no issue with weaponry, with the use of those systems. While I was in Iraq, something happened. One day my chaplain and I received a phone call. My chaplain liked to have prayer over the bodies of fallen soldiers. Now we have a very clear understanding as Seventh-day Adventists about what happens to us when we die. We know that according to Ecclesiastes 9:5, the living know that they shall die, but the dead know how much, friends? The dead know not anything. They know nothing. But I let my chaplain do his thing. I was there to provide administrative support and security for him. And as I'm standing there at Mortuary Affairs in Missoula, Iraq, my chaplain is inside the little cooler area. He's standing over this fallen U.S. soldier who had received a sniper round to the head. My chaplain was praying for him, praying for his family. And as I'm standing there watching, didn't have a whole lot going through my mind. I was thinking about the soldier, thinking about his family. I discovered that he had been married about 18 months and that his wife was pregnant with their first child. A child that he may never have the opportunity to see. But as I'm standing there, as I've kind of just got a distant stare, as audibly as I could hear one of you come up and talk to me right now, I heard a voice within my mind that said, throw down your weapon. Friends, you've got to understand something. If you had told me, Specialist Bentley, you will one day be a conscientious objector, I would have politely as possible have laughed in your face. That was the farthest thing from my mind. And so when I first heard that, this look of confusion came over my face. And then I heard it again. And it began to trouble me. My chaplain comes out of the mortuary affairs there, and he asks me, he says, Bentley, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm okay, sir. But I was not completely truthful with him. My body language said something totally different to me, to him. But I tried to put it out of my mind. I tried not to think about it because I loved being a soldier. You have to know the entire story, and I don't have time to tell you this morning, but you have to know the entire story of how Ginger and I prayed desperately that if the Lord did not want me to go into the army, that He would close the door. And friends, I can tell you story after story of how God opened the door. So I was convinced beyond any doubt that God wanted me there. So I began to question, I began to ask God, Lord, why did you allow me to get into the army? Why did you allow me to go through the training? Why did you wait until I got to Iraq to drop this in my lap? The Lord told me, it took you coming to Iraq before you were willing to listen to me. So friends, I had a giant to face. I had to face the prospect of following the voice of God and turning in my weapon in a combat zone. How many of you, just show of hands, would think that would be a popular move? And so that's what I dwelt on. I constantly went through these scenarios thinking, well, if I turn in my weapon, people are going to think this. They're going to think I'm a coward. They're going to think that I hate my country. They're going to think that. And so I continued to argue with God. God, you've got the wrong Joe. I'm sorry, Lord. I love you. I really do. No, you don't. If you loved me, you wouldn't be arguing with me. My friends begin to ask me, Bentley, what's wrong with you? Because over the period of the next 2 or 3 weeks, I couldn't sleep. And something more devastating than that, I lost my appetite. A brother loves to eat, amen? You don't get equity like this, not liking to eat. Okay? So my buddies noticed this, and the things that were going on within my heart began to manifest themselves in my physical appearance. Bentley, what's wrong? Are you okay? I'm okay. Just give me some time. Just let me be and I'll be okay. Friends, finally, I couldn't take it anymore. One evening in my room, I decided to pray and give in to God. I knelt there in my little room and I just poured my heart out to God. And I said, God, I do not want this for my life. But I want you more than I want my own way. Please show me your will for my life. And friends, when I prayed that prayer, it was like a tank had rolled off my chest. Did all of my giants go away? No. Many of the things that I feared came to reality. Buddies who had once hung out with me and done things with me wouldn't have anything to do with me. There were those that wouldn't even come up and shake my hand. And I began to desperately plead with God. Lord, please show me how I can glorify you in this situation. I said, Lord, make me the best chaplain assistant within the theater of operation. Lord, please give me at least one soldier every day that I can reach out to, that I can pray with, that I can be an encouragement to. And friends, God answered that prayer. And slowly, I went to Iraq in June of 2006. I turned in my weapon in October. We weren't scheduled to go home until June of 2007. Friends, that's a long time to walk around a combat zone with the enemy being inside the fence. But by God's grace, one by one, those who had originally turned their back on me began to come up to me and they said, Bentley, we can't figure you out, but we can tell that you mean what you say. Friends, that prayer of submission to the Lord God became my stone that God used to take down my giant of fear. I'm not going to stand here and tell you today that all of your fears will go away with just one prayer, because mine certainly didn't. But I want to remind you of what the Bible tells us in 1 Samuel 13, verse 14. When God was speaking to Samuel, he told him, he said, I want a man after my own heart. And friends, David was that man. To have the heart of God means to have a heart that is willing to trust God no matter what. It means trusting God when your finances seem to be failing. It means trusting God when they come up and hand you a pink slip at work and they tell you, well, we're downsizing. Isn't that the nice term that they use nowadays? We're not firing you. We're trimming costs. Business is business. I understand they have to do what they have to do. But that doesn't make it any more palatable, does it? And friends, even though we don't stand on a field of battle, facing a 9 foot, 9 inch tall Philistine giant, the giants that you and I face are no less formidable. they're no less scary. When a doctor comes in and looks you in the eye and says, you have an incurable form of cancer. We can give you radiation. We can do chemotherapy. But your chances are still less than 5%. Friends, that's a fearful giant. When you look at your children and you wonder what you're going to feed them, that's a menacing giant. But friends, if we can have the heart of God, then we can overcome those giants. God will give us victory, much like He gave David. The same God who helped David, the same God who helped me, is the same God who stands ready, willing, and able to help you overcome the giants in your life. We're told in Acts 10:34 that God is no respecter of persons. In other words, He doesn't hear my prayers more because I'm a pastor. He doesn't hear Reed's or Norman's or Dick's or Brad's or Dorothy or any of our other elders. He doesn't hear their prayers more because they're an elder in the church. Because He is no respecter of persons. He doesn't look at black. He doesn't look at white. He doesn't look at yellow, brown, red. You know where God looks, friends? He looks right here. What did He tell Samuel when Samuel was going to choose David? He said, don't look at his appearance. Because you've got Saul in mind, Samuel. You're going to be looking for the next Saul. But Samuel, I'm here to tell you that man looks on the outside. But I, the living God, look on the inside. What will God find when He looks in your heart today, friend? Is He going to find a heart that beats in tune with His? Or is He going to find a heart that beats in rebellion? I can't answer that for you. You have to answer that. You have to stand toe-to-toe with God and say, Lord, please take me. Please give me a new heart. What does Psalm 51 tell us? Create in me what kind of heart, friends? A new heart. A clean heart. Create in me a clean heart. Oh, God. And then I love the last part of it. Restore a right spirit within me. Friends, you and I need that clean heart. We need a right spirit within us if we expect to stand in the face of giants that are surely to come our way. You hear the old saying, you've only seen the tip of the iceberg. And we think of the Titanic, don't we? They only saw a portion of the iceberg sticking out of the frozen waters in the North Atlantic. It was what was buried beneath the surface of the water that ripped through those supposedly watertight compartments. It's been quoted that one of the writers of the Titanic said, God Himself could not sink this ship. Friends, I pray that you do not have the attitude today that says, God Himself cannot stop me. I pray that you have the heart of a shepherd boy. I pray that you will have a heart that beats in tune with God's. And that you would be willing to surrender everything to Him. Because God is not a respecter of persons.
You have been listening to the broadcast from the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church at 2420 East Ashman in Midland, Michigan. If you are in the area, we cordially invite you to visit our church Saturday mornings. If you are a distance away, we encourage you to continue visiting our website and weekly podcast at midlandsda.org.